This is Audible.
Audible Originals presents How to Defeat a Demon King in 10 Easy Steps. Written by Andrew Rowe. Performed by Susie Jackson and Steve West.
Dedication. This one is dedicated to all the people out there trying to save our world in any way they can. Thank you to all the doctors, engineers, scientists, teachers, and other wonderful human beings that work to save lives or make our existence better. Step 1. Be the legendary chosen hero. Father always told me that true heroism was when someone fought for what was right, regardless of the risk to themselves. But Father was wrong. True heroism was a passive skill only available to the hero class, unlocked 42nd level. Unfortunately, I wasn't a hero. There wasn't much chance that I ever could have been, really. For whatever reason, hero was an advanced class that only farmers and orphans could unlock, at least as far as anyone could tell me. This was unfortunate, because the world really needed a hero, even if most people weren't willing to admit it. The year was 4423D, the 23rd year in the reign of the resurrected Demon King. Tradition held that the Demon King would expand his power for 100 years after his rebirth. Only then would the hero be reborn. This had happened dozens, maybe hundreds of times. History generally remembered the great heroes based on their most famous accomplishments. We called them the first hero, the speedy runner hero, the fairy harem hero, and so on. They always had brave companions, too. The most notable were their fairies, the fire fairy, the sword fairy, and more infamous ones like the fairy who failed and the traitorous fallen fairy. Historically, the hero was usually born just in time to turn the war around, with half of the planet under the Demon King's control. Maybe a little more, a little less, depending on how ambitious the current Demon King was. This time around, things had gone a little differently. A major human nation had sold out to the Demon King, more or less instantly, and then marched with his armies to wipe out the neighboring nations of dwarves and elves. From there, they'd pressed on further, taking more soldiers from the survivors of nations they burned and enslaved. The result? We had 77 years before the revival of the hero, and more than half the world had already been taken. If we waited for the coming of the hero, there wouldn't be much of a world left for him to save. Fortunately, I had a plan. When I was young, I hoped to earn a class like warrior or barbarian. Who didn't want to hit people with a giant sword? And they had some great advanced classes, too. But I wasn't born particularly strong, or fast, or, if I'm being honest, talented with weapons. Unlocking classes had certain requirements. They weren't always things you had to accomplish, at least for basic classes. Losing your parents at a young enough age could get you the orphan class. In spite of the humble-sounding name, it's one of the strongest classes to start with, enough so that some people might take extreme steps to try to earn it. No, I didn't do anything dark and murderous to get a class like that. I like my parents. I did, however, briefly ask Mom to disinherit me so I could get a shot at unlocking it. No, dear, I'm not going to disown you and put you out on the streets to get a class. That would be terribly irresponsible. But Mom, it probably wouldn't take more than a few days for me to be eligible. Mom gave me a withering look, folding her arms. Absolutely not. And I will hear nothing more of the matter. A few minutes later, my next conversation began with, "So, Daddy, I was wondering if you'd be willing to disown me a little." He thought it was funnier, but he was similarly unconvinced. Much of my childhood went like that. I remember hearing a lot of things like, "No, dear, I don't believe that giving you a miniature village and burning it down would count as a tragic backstory. Absolutely not, sweetie. We are not renaming you Hero to try to fool the goddesses. No reasonable person would be fooled by that, and the goddesses certainly wouldn't be either. We are not buying a farm to get you the farmer class. When you're old enough, if you want to go work on a farm, you can do that. You are most definitely not the missing child of a deposed royal bloodline, and we are not spreading rumors to that effect to try to get you a secret princess class. I'm not even sure that's a class. I can't see why it would be. No, dear. I don't believe declaring our house a kingdom would earn you the normal princess class either. They actually humored me and tried that one, declaring loudly the founding of our Housia to the world. Predictably, nothing happened. I pushed for them to get some paperwork signed to authenticate our newly founded kingdom, but that was apparently a step too far. You'd think I'd be disappointed by all that, but really, it just gave me fuel for more ideas. And in spite of many false starts, I eventually found one that worked. For certain values of worked, anyway. From the age of 9 onward, I wore a backpack all the time. For 8 years, I hauled things around for friends, family, and eventually as a part-time job, until finally I unlocked the right class. While that might sound like something you do to unlock an explorer class, and indeed there is one with similar requirements, I was shooting for something a lot less popular. The illustrious Bag Mage class. No, not Blue Mage. Bag Mage. Doesn't sound very impressive, does it? Bag mages generally have one function in society: hauling goods long distances. They often serve as assistants to merchants. Some merchants even multi-class into it, if they're too poor to afford a bag mage of their own. But most of them won't admit to it. Nobles will often employ a bag mage or two to haul their stuff around when they go on vacations or that sort of thing. Umbrellas, tents, all those things that you might expect a pack animal to carry. Bag mages. If you're thinking that sounds like a cross between a wizard and a mule, you have the right idea about where we tend to fit into society. By the way, bag mage isn't even the easiest magic-using class to unlock. I could have gotten a traditional fire mage class by starting a bunch of fires, for example, in a much smaller time frame. Similarly, all I would have needed for a life mage class was to spend a lot of time mending plants, animals, and people. So, why'd I want to be a bag mage when I could have worked to get something more impressive sounding with much less effort? Well, bag mages have one particularly useful ability. Inventory. The ability to put something they're touching into an extra dimensional space, then retrieve it later. Inventory has a number of limitations. Every bag mage has a maximum capacity for their inventory. They have a limited number of slots, and each slot has a capacity in terms of the size and mass of an object that can be stored within it. A novice bag mage has such a small inventory that it barely has any use. At the start, the most I could store was 4 large rocks, one in each of my 4 inventory slots. Fortunately, I only needed to store one thing in order to get my plan started. Upon obtaining my class, I was finally ready to test the first stage of my plan. For this, I had to travel to the Sword Shrine. The Sword Shrine was the location that housed the legendary hero's sword, one of the only weapons capable of harming the Demon King. The blade was plunged into a metal platform encrusted with divine enchantments designed to only allow a true hero to draw it. In the days of ancient history, the Sword Shrine was a place of great reverence, attended to by priests and serving as a quiet place of prayer and contemplation. Currently, it was a popular tourist destination. The kingdom charged a small fee for anyone to enter and try to draw the sword, which was, of course, supposed to be impossible for anyone other than the hero. Kids loved it, My coin purse hated it. But on the positive side, it gave me a chance to test my plan without having to do anything too shady, like sneaking in during the middle of the night. I wasn't above doing that sort of thing, but I was grateful I didn't have to resort to such tactics, at least for the moment. I paid the fee and waited in line. In front of me, I watched numerous others attempt to draw the legendary blade. The sword's crystalline hilt shimmered brightly, and the pommel jewel was breathtaking. I wondered absently if anyone had ever tried to pry it off. The blade was the most beautiful part of all, with silvery white metal that glimmered with divine power. Even at a glance, I could tell there was something wondrous about it. It was the type of shimmer and glow that captivated my imagination. I could see myself wielding it proudly, defying the Demon King and striking him down. Ahead of me, several small children seemed to share the same notion. I was mildly embarrassed, but still determined. A huge-looking guy walked up to the pedestal, gripped the blade tightly, and drew some attention from the crowd. He braced himself and yanked on the hilt, lightly at first. When the sword didn't budge, he pulled harder, gripping with two hands and straining with effort. "Activate strength of steel!" There was a gasp of astonishment from the crowd as his skin shifted to a metallic color and sheen. He'd activated a skill, one of the abilities granted by a class. From the look of him and the name of the skill, I was guessing he was a blacksmith or something similar and accustomed to working with metal. With his body reinforced by a powerful skill like that, I bet he could have cracked ordinary stone or metal with his bare hands. But this was no ordinary blade, and the enchantments that held it were divine. It would take more than brute strength to tear it free. Stronger people had tried and failed. I gave him a nod of approval, though, even as his skill ended and he turned away in failure, allowing the next person to step up to the pedestal. His thought process was not dissimilar to my own, even if he'd taken a more direct approach than I intended to. Minutes passed. I waited my turn, feeling my shoulders tighten and my stomach churn. Could this possibly work? Was I a fool for even trying? With desperate hope and determination, I suppressed my anxiety and stepped up to the platform. I rested my hands on the grip of the sword, imagining the struggles of heroes long ago. And with a word, I pronounced my intent. Inventory. There was a brief shimmer from the blade. And then...
Your inventory skill level is too low to store this item.
The message appeared in the midst of my vision. It wasn't one I'd seen before, but I understood the meaning. I had failed. But in spite of that, I felt my lips curl up in a smile. I released the grip of the sword and made my way out of the sword shrine. Skill levels could be earned. Now, I had work to do. Step 2. Unlock your latent heroic power. In order to improve my inventory's functionality, I had to make use of it. That's how skills tend to work in general. Use them enough and they get better. Use it a whole bunch and it might even unlock new skills, or improve into an advanced skill if it reaches the maximum skill level. Notably, skill levels increase independently of your overall personal level. They're purely use-based. For example, a fire mage who sits around in town and lights things on fire can increase their fire magic skill. This is, however, relatively slow for a couple reasons. First, because skills increase much more slowly if they do not have a valid target. For fire magic, that means the fire mage would have to actually burn things. And when you burn things that aren't yours, that's arson, kids. Second, unless you're doing some really good arson, meaning burning high-level stuff, raising skill is a slow process. The higher level your target for a skill, the faster your skill increases. This is why most adventurers raise their attack-focused skills by fighting monsters. They can do so without having to worry about being arrested. Sparring works to some degree, but just hitting someone with fire doesn't get you much of a reward unless they're significantly hurt, and that gets awkward. Anyway, I digress. The second problem is fire magic uses mana, a limited resource. Everyone has a little bit of mana flowing in their body. It's an ephemeral power that is used to power spells and skills, with each consuming a different amount of mana. Generally, the higher the level a spell or skill, the more mana it consumes. Using too much mana causes exhaustion. Eventually, if you run out entirely, you simply stop being able to use spells and skills until you rest and recover. If I'd started out as a fire mage, I might have been able to throw 3 or so fire spells before I had to rest for a significant period of time. A higher level fire mage would have more mana to work with, and thus be able to cast more spells. But actually increasing my level as a fire mage would require going out and fighting monsters. Fighting monsters when you can only cast 3 spells at a time is, of course, super dangerous. And also extremely tedious. My dear, sweet inventory didn't have those problems. Any object that I wanted to put into my inventory was a valid target for raising my skill. And inventory didn't cost any mana. Putting items into my inventory was nearly instant, and so was taking them out. You probably see where this is going. Each day and night after unlocking the class, whenever I had free time, I'd sit down and practice. Inventory. A shimmering space would appear in front of me, displaying glittering symbols representing the items in my inventory's space. If I wanted to add an item to my inventory, I needed to touch it and speak the appropriate phrase. If I wanted to remove an item, I could either speak the appropriate phrase or press on the symbol corresponding to that item. Remove rock. A rock appeared in my hand, and the rock symbol disappeared from my vision. Add rock. The rock vanished, and the symbol reappeared.
Your bag magic skill level has increased to 2.
I laughed. It may have been a slightly maniacal laugh. I am not ashamed. My parents may have given me some worried looks, though. Remove rock. Add rock. And so I continued. Every time my bag magic skill increased, my number of inventory slots increased. With a skill level of 2, I now had 8 slots available. I experimented with many other mundane objects around the household, both to alleviate my boredom and to try to determine what would increase my skill level the fastest. My parents were somewhat confused by my hobby, but supportive.
You need to take notes if you're going to be testing your skill gains,
Father explained to me.
Here.
He pushed over a quill and parchment.
As soon as you get to your next skill level, start counting.
I'm already counting, I complained. In my head, I have literally nothing better to do.
Take notes, he insisted. A pattern will most likely emerge. From there, we can get into efficiency testing.
I nodded to him. Mother was a merchant, and father was a retired scholar. Mother made the real money for the family, but father did the bookkeeping, and he was good at it. He always had a head for numbers, and I'd like to think I inherited just a bit of it. Enough to understand his idea and put it into practice, at least. As I continued the process, I followed his advice. I took meticulous notes on the number of times I needed to open my inventory and use it before increasing my skill, and which item I'd used for that particular skill level. The goal was simple enough: figure out if storing some items would increase my skill level faster than increasing others. If I had some kind of skill for monitoring my progress between levels, it would have been a lot easier. But I didn't have anything that did that. Now, if it always required a static amount of work to go up a level, this would have been relatively simple. Sadly, skills don't work that way. The amount of practice it takes to increase a level naturally goes up from one level to the next. And because the gods are vicious things, the rates of skill advancement aren't always consistent from skill to skill. Thus, to determine the efficiency of individual items, I first had to test the same item across multiple skill levels to try to determine the approximate level curve. By that, I mean adding and removing the same rock over and over and checking how many repetitions it took to increase my skill level from 2 to 3, 3 to 4, etc. That took a while. After that, I got into testing the efficiency of different item types. Some of the most obvious things to test would have been objects of extraordinary value, like bars of gold or legendary magical relics. Sadly, my parents were fresh out of both, so I stuck with the basics. I tried smaller rocks, less efficient than the same large one I'd been using, but only if they were really small. Keys, 20% more efficient than rocks. Coins, efficiency based on the metallic content, with silver weirdly being more efficient than gold. Knives, even more efficient than coins, and a bunch of other random household items. After that, I got into some more esoteric stuff. Add bag. I was thrilled to find that I could store containers that contained other items in my inventory, and apparently, they only took up a single slot. Unfortunately, in terms of my skill progression, storing a bag only seemed to count the bag itself, not the contents. So, storing a bag filled with coins wouldn't give me dozens of times more skill credit than storing a single coin. It was a shame, but good to know. Add water. I was surprised to find that I could store a liquid without it being in a container. I just put my hand into a bucket, and a small amount of water vanished, which I could then remove from my inventory at any time. I didn't know if that would ever actually be useful, but it was interesting, at least. Add book. Books were the strangest. They had different storage values on a per-book basis, which didn't appear to be based on the weight of the book. I tried writing some things myself on parchment to see if I could figure out the efficiency of notes with individual letters, such as an empty page, or a page with the letter A written all over it, or a page with legible writing, or a page covered with ink. But I couldn't find any difference among those. I wasn't sure why, but I suspected it had something to do with individual pages being too small of a sample. Throughout the process, I unlocked a number of inventory-related skills.
Your bag magic skill level has increased to 20. You have learned the improved inventory capacity skill.
That skill drastically increased the size and mass of objects I could put into single inventory slots. That was extremely useful, because while my number of slots had increased in a seemingly linear fashion with each level, my capacity per slot had only been increasing very slowly up until that point. I'd been able to store slightly larger rocks with each level, but I hadn't figured out a formula for it. Anyway, with improved inventory capacity, I had more options. I tested things like larger rocks and some metal pots and pans, but nothing turned out to be much more efficient for skill gains. Object size impacted skill gain rate a little, but not much. I tried some larger and more esoteric stuff after that, like storing walls, but...
Error. Cannot be stored. Object is above maximum capacity.
Unfortunate, but at least I could store more water in a single slot, or things like an entire backpack.
Your bag magic skill level has increased to 50. You have gained the mental inventory activation skill.
That was an interesting one. It let me open and close my inventory, or add and remove items, just by thinking about it. I tried testing if that changed the rate at which my skills increased, but it didn't seem to. I went back saying things aloud after that, at least for the most part. I was just too used to it. Eventually, Mom loaned me her wedding ring. That changed everything. Thanks. I love you, Mom, and I owe you many, many thanks for the time you saved me on leveling up. The wedding ring proved to be 45 times more efficient than my dear, sweet, and reliable testing rock. It was also nearly 10 times more efficient than the next best thing I'd found, which was a fancy kitchen knife. I think she was concerned about me losing it from time to time, but as long as I only used it while I was at home, she tolerated it. And with that, I had everything I needed. Inventory. Remove wedding ring. Add wedding ring.
Your bag magic skill level has increased to 75. You have gained superior inventory capacity skill.
I still couldn't store walls, sadly. But I found myself capable of storing entire drums of water in one inventory slot after that. I kept going. It took an entire year of spending hours and hours each day, but eventually, I reached the message I'd been striving for since the beginning.
Your bag magic skill level has increased to 100. You have gained the ultimate inventory capacity skill.
That was impressive in itself. Ultimate inventory capacity increased the amount of mass I could store in a single inventory by a factor of 10. I was curious if I could store an entire house now, but my parents, barely, convinced me not to test that on our home. That wasn't even the most important thing I'd earned, though, not by a long shot. A second message had displayed in my mind, one I'd only dreamed of seeing.
Your bag magic has improved into the advanced skill Dimensional Magic.
Perfect. Now, it was about time I got myself a sword. Step 3. Obtain the Hero's Sword. After returning my mother's wedding ring and giving her my eternal gratitude, I was ready to get started on my next test. Along with dimensional magic, I had unlocked a single spell, Blink. Blink was a short-distance teleportation spell which could be used on myself, any object of reasonable size I touched, or another person. I could also use it on myself and up to two other people at the same time, as long as we were in physical contact. Oh, and just to be clear, people were transported with whatever they were carrying. Teleporting people out of their clothes was a funny idea, but not actually how the spell worked. The main disadvantage of Blink was the range. It only could go about 50 feet, and it required a clear line of sight to the destination. I presumed that would be improved somewhat as I increased my dimensional magic skill, but likely not enough to ever be used as a long-distance travel spell. I'd probably have to unlock higher-level spells for that sort of thing. It also cost mana to use, which I had very little of, since I was only first level. After testing it, I determined I had enough mana to use Blink a total of 3 times before I found myself completely exhausted and needed to rest. If I tried to use Blink a 4th time, it failed outright, and I saw a message that said,
"You have insufficient mana to use this spell."
I spent one day practicing with Blink, just to be safe. Doing that, as well as storing more things, didn't raise my dimensional magic skill at all. I wasn't too worried, though. Increasing dimensional magic wasn't my priority. I headed back to the sword shrine, nervously practicing storing things in my inventory the whole journey. It took me about a day to get there. My hometown wasn't far from the capital, Sovereign's Peak, where the sword shrine was located. I paid the entrance fee, stood in line, and gripped the sword. Please, please work. Inventory. Add Hero's Sword. The blade of the sword flashed with bright light. A message flashed in my vision too fast to process. And then I was surrounded by darkness. The first thing I did was panic, which I think is pretty understandable since I couldn't breathe. The fact that I couldn't see my surroundings was pretty bad too, but breathing is even more important. It was cold, too. Oppressively cold. Numbness was rapidly spreading across my skin, and that same cold was rapidly flowing up my nose as I tried and failed to draw in breath. I choked on the lack of air. I flailed around for a moment, and my arm hit something hard. I could feel something, at least. That pain gave me the slightest bit of focus. My hand moved, gripping the object, and I recognized it instantly. I'd stored it thousands upon thousands of times, after all. My rock. After a moment of confusion, I understood the void around me. I opened my mouth, feeling frigid air enter, and spoke into the oppressive dark. Remove all inventory. Even as my throat froze, I felt something shift, and then the blessed light and warmth of the world returned. I found myself back in the sword shrine, collapsed in front of the pedestal. I heard a murmur from the crowd around me. I coughed and choked. I barely remember the next few minutes as people rushed around me. Fortunately, among the priests at the shrine, at least a handful of them were still actual practitioners of divine magic. I felt someone's warm hand on my forehead and heard a man's voice say, "Lesser heal." That warmth spread across my body. It was a blissful sensation, too perfect to bear after the harrowing ordeal I'd just gone through. That, at least, is the best explanation for why I lost consciousness a few moments later. I woke in an unfamiliar bed, too tired and weak to even panic at that fact. Blearily, I opened my eyes and processed the world around me. There was a man sitting in a chair next to me, wearing the traditional robes of a white mage. He looked to be about my age, with dark skin and a distinctive scar over his right eye. He was asleep, at least until the moment I sat up.
Huh?
He wiped a bit of drool off his lips as he woke, then processed his own surroundings as I did. I was in a small private chamber with stone walls on all sides, a large wooden door, and a stained glass window depicting four of the first hero's companions in battle against the four generals of the Demon King. It was traditional for a hero's companions to match themselves against each of the Demon King's generals, one at a time, for reasons I could never fully understand. From that, I put together my likely location. I felt a bit chagrined, but it was better to be in the sword shrine than in some random guy's bedroom.
"You're awake,"
the man proclaimed, brightening at the sight of me.
"Oh, you probably shouldn't sit up so fast, though. You're probably going to need to take some time to heal."
From the way my head was spinning, I had to agree. I groaned. Mom is going to be pissed. The robed man gave me a sympathetic smile.
"Is there someone we should be contacting on your behalf, mayhap?"
"My parents know I'm here," I sighed. "I just really was hoping it would work this time." He raised an eyebrow at me.
"This time?"
I tried using my inventory skill on the sword before, but I wasn't high enough level for it to even register. Now, apparently my skill level was high enough, but it went even worse. Must have triggered some kind of magical defenses on the stone or the sword.
"Oh dear. Yes. Perhaps you weren't thinking about spell reflection? It's one of the hero's sword's iconic characteristics."
I sighed. I'd known that the hero's sword could reflect nearly all forms of magic. It was legendary for being able to reflect the Demon King's energy balls, after all. But I didn't think that would extend to something as innocuous as storing it in my inventory. It was only then that I was able to recall and process the message that I'd seen in my vision before I passed out.
"Your inventory spell has been reflected."
Oops. Well, that wasted quite a bit of time then. I rubbed my throat, which still ached in spite of the healing. "Thanks for healing me. That was you, right?" He nodded.
"It's my job. Well, one of my jobs. You'd be surprised how many people hurt themselves trying to get the sword. At least you didn't use attack magic. That can make a real mess."
He reached out with his hand.
"I'm Ken. Kensei."
"Yui Shah." I shook his hand. "Sorry to cause you trouble." Ken laughed.
"Ah, it's nothing. In fact, That was the most interesting thing that's happened here in years. Sure, people try to blow up the altar now and again, but I've never seen someone try a skill and simply vanish before. Very few people make a sincere effort to try unusual approaches like you did.
I gave him a weak smile. Thanks, I guess. I guess I'll get started on Plan B as soon as I'm healed.
Plan B? I hope that doesn't involve a hammer and chisel.
I snorted. No, no. I'm going to try my blink spell next. But I don't think that'll work either. Then from there, I'll give up on the sword for a while and try other things. I'll circle back around when I'm higher level and have more options.
You seem very invested in the idea of pulling out this sword.
Ken frowned.
Why is that?
I can't just wait for some hero to show up and save the world. I took a breath. I can't just wait and watch while the world burns around me. There's no telling how much will be left when the hero rises. And even when he does arrive, he could fail. It's happened.
Twice, that we know of.
Ken nodded.
The Bad End hero, who was defeated by the Demon King when his fairy companion, the Fallen Fairy, betrayed him. And then there was Water Temple hero, who was supposedly the most powerful hero of all time, but disappeared into the Water Temple, never to return.
I should have expected someone who worked at the Sword Shrine to be well-versed in the legends of the hero. Yeah. What if it happens again? With the rate that the Demon King's armies are moving,
he has a chance to succeed this time and completely wipe out humanity.
Ken nodded.
I know. I agree with you.
You do? I blinked.
Indeed. But there's nothing to be done.
He shook his head sadly.
Alas and alack. None can challenge the Demon King without the hero. So it is written, and so it shall always be.
Is that really such a certainty, though? I frowned. I mean, haven't some other adventurers gotten close to beating him?
There are scattered tales, to be certain. But I'm afraid neither of us is quite the right person for the job. We're dressed entirely wrong for it, for one.
What does that have to do with it? I asked.
It's well known that the hero must always wear a green tunic, Ken said. It's one of his most iconic characteristics, and neither of us is properly dressed for such a role.
I could buy a different outfit, I offered. But wait, hold on. No, that clearly can't be a relevant problem.
You'd be surprised how important an outfit can be. And beyond that, equipment. Do you have bombs? A bow? Magic arrows? A harmonica?
No. But wait, no. I can see why bombs and arrows might be helpful, but why in the world would I need a harmonica? Ken raised an eyebrow.
To play the sacred melodies, obviously. Haven't you heard the legends at all?
Some of the heroes played those songs, but not all of them. And besides, I was really planning to circumvent a lot of that. Ken patted me on the knee.
I'm sure you were, dear. But there are reasons why the hero must do the things he does. It's tradition, you know.
The Demon King seems to be ignoring tradition himself. He's conquering far faster this time.
Indeed. Very rude of him, I must say.
Ken shook his head.
It's like he has no standards at all.
I sighed. Right. Don't you think we should, you know, maybe do something about that? Ken hesitated.
I don't know. That sounds an awful lot like breaking from tradition.
I'm going to be honest. I'm not that worried about it. I'd rather, you know, actually save people. Ken lowered his head.
I suppose. You're not the only one that feels that way. I've seen other adventurous types who have said the same. Many powerful adventurers come by and try to claim the sword, desperate to make a difference. I've seen people try dozens of clever things. Trying to dispel the runes, trying to reshape the platform. Someone even changed their name to Hero to try to trick the sword that way.
I snorted. That's a good one. I should meet that guy.
didn't work, obviously, but there have been many good efforts.
He frowned.
If the goddesses do not will it, what chance does any of us have to succeed?
I don't know, I admitted. But all I can do is try. There's no harm in trying to save the world, is there?
Well, not unless you break something important,
he pointed out.
Please don't break anything important.
Can't promise anything. I smiled. But, you know, if you're worried about me breaking things, you could go with me.
Ken frowned. I'm not certain what use I would be. I have very few skills, aside from healing magic, an impeccable fashion sense, and prodigious skill at swordplay.
I stared at him. What was that last part again?
Oh, I'm rather good with color coordination, if I say so myself. I very nearly took a level in fashionista, but
no, the other last part. Aren't you supposed to be a priest?
Ken smiled. Ah, I suppose I didn't introduce myself properly. I am a priest, at least in profession, but that's not my class.
He shifted so I could see that on the side of his robes he had a belt.
I have a somewhat unusual class. It came from being raised at the sword shrine and training here in both holy magic and the use of swords.
Unusual class? He rested a hand on the hilt at his side.
Indeed. They call me a sword saint.
That night, Ken helped me down the stairs. I was a little wobbly on my feet, but determined not to waste the evening. Then, with his assistance, I tried a few things. Blink. The sword shimmered brightly when I cast the spell on it. Then I found myself teleported the opposite direction of where I'd intended to transport the sword. I frowned, but it wasn't the worst possible scenario. I could have ended up in an endless, suffocating void again, or maybe teleported inside the floor. That would have been awkward. After that, it was time to test the pedestal. Even if the sword had spell reflection, that didn't mean the pedestal itself did. Inventory. Add pedestal.
The target has resisted your inventory spell.
I wrinkled my nose. Inventory. I repeated that 100 times. The pedestal resisted me every time. Still, resistance wasn't immunity. Maybe if I got my dimensional magic skill high enough, I'd be able to make it work. Next, I tried to teleport the pedestal. Blink.
Invalid target.
That's frustratingly vague. I wonder if it's because the pedestal is attached to the ground? Unfortunately, I didn't have enough experience with using Blink to fully understand its limitations yet. The message itself wasn't very clear either. For the moment, the important part was that it hadn't worked, and that it hadn't mentioned anything about my skill level being too low. That meant that it was unlikely to be a skill-related problem, and thus, I probably wouldn't be able to get it to work in the future. I'd have to keep looking for other options to test. After my failures, I watched Ken make his own efforts.
Great Leah, high above us in the kingdom of the sky, I beseech you. Please give me your guidance and show me the righteous path, for I, your humble servant, seek only to end the darkness that encroaches upon this land.
He placed his hands on the hilt.
Bless.
He cast the spell on himself, making a soft golden glow play across his skin.
Lesser strength.
Then he pulled on the hilt. As expected, it didn't budge. I waited a few minutes politely while he prayed silently, then helped me back up the stairs. It was a good effort, I said to him.
Agreed,
he replied.
So, what is the next step of your plan?
This may sound like an odd question, but do you have any idea where we can find some slimes? Step 4. Find the most powerful monsters available. Ken did not, in fact, know where to find slimes. He did, however, know how to locate the local adventurers' guild, There, we were directed at the counter to a grizzled veteran. She was over 6 feet tall, battle-scarred, and wore some kind of unidentifiable animal hide. On her back, she wore a huge axe made out of some kind of crystal. I liked her immediately. "Excuse me," I walked over to her. "Can I ask you a few questions?"
"Already are, little one. What can Greta help you with?"
She gave me a broad smile, exposing teeth that were just a little too sharp. "We were hoping to find a place with slimes."
"Slimes is common monster. Go anywhere."
She waved a hand.
"Forest, hills, wizard lair, many slimes."
Greta nodded, mostly to herself.
"Is there a place where we can find slimes in a high concentration, without a lot of other monsters?" Ken asked.
"Why? Is slime bounty season again?"
She frowned.
"No one tell Greta this."
I raised my hands. "No, nothing like that. I'm just, particularly interested in hunting down some slimes. We're both new adventurers, you see."
"Ah, is just babies."
She grinned and slapped me on the shoulder.
"Slimes less scary than goblins, yes? Greta sees. Let think."
Greta rubbed at her chin.
"There is, what is it? Dripping forest? Ah, no. Sludge forest. That is it. You go 3, maybe 5 miles east, down road. See sign that says, danger, keep out. Ignore sign. Good hunting."
She nodded. "Thank you. That sounds very helpful." I smiled. "Is there anything we can do to repay the favor?"
"You kill slimes. Get levels. Then you come back and buy me drink. Yes?"
Greta laughed.
"I be waiting for you."
I nodded. I intended to buy her several. We headed to the sludge forest. Ken seemed somewhat less excited about the prospect than I was.
"So, you have an actual reason to be hunting slimes?"
I grinned. "Don't worry. You'll see soon enough. Probably."
"And you can't just, tell me this plan before I walk into the place filled with monsters?"
"They're slimes. They barely count as monsters. And if I told you my plan in advance, that would limit my ability to pretend something else was my plan all along." He laughed.
"Ah, I see your logic. Very well, then."
He looked cheerful, but I could see a hint of nervousness on his expression, and in the way his hand settled on the hilt of the sword at his side. Truth be told, I was nervous too. I didn't even have a sword, just one of the kitchen knives I'd borrowed from Mom and a few rocks. That would have to be enough, at least for now. My class couldn't even use swords. I had plans to address that problem as well, of course. There was no way I could justify taking the hero's sword unless I planned to wield it. When we reached the sludge forest, it looked, pretty disgusting. Colorful goop dripped off the trees, sliding into cracks in the ground and occasionally forming pools. Ken froze when he saw what the place actually looked like.
"Could we, mayhap go back to town for a bit? I think I left something behind. In my other pants. My, bravery. I left my bravery in my other pants."
I patted him on the arm. "Steady there. It's not going to be that dangerous." I paused for a moment, then added, "Probably." Ken winced.
"Look, it's not that I'm that scared of dying in the middle of nowhere in a horrifying monster-infested wilderness. It's more that, well, that place looks rather unsanitary."
A blob of gloop fell off a nearby tree, as if to emphasize his point. "I don't see the problem." I stared at him. "Adventuring is messy business."
"Ah, yes,
Certainly. He gave a little laugh. It's just that, well, the traditional clothing of priests and sword saints is, well, white. And surely you can see that this, he waved to the forest, would rather clash with my aesthetic? Pfft, it'll be fine. We'll just stick to the roads. They don't look too bad. The roads were only maybe 70% covered in green goop. Ken frowned. Don't be such a worrier. I headed toward the path. We'll just head in, fight a slime or two, and head back. No mess, no distress. I liked that rhyme. I'm still proud of it.
I suppose. Very well. I shall accompany you.
He straightened himself and walked to my side. I took a better look at the area ahead of us. I could see why this was a good place to find slime monsters. They were directly related to the goop on the trees. Given that there was a road going through this area, it probably hadn't always been like this. I suspected some kind of magical accident was involved. Taking magic seriously and handling it responsibly is important, kids. Just ignore the fact that I started out my journey by throwing random spells at a divine artifact. The trickiest part of the sludge forest was trying to identify where the goop ended and slime monster began. I almost missed the first one we encountered. Fortunately, Ken didn't. The slime was blue and shaped like a teardrop, about the size of a small dog. When it hopped toward us out of the goop, Ken's hand moved, drawing his sword and cutting through the air in a near instant.
Hiya! Take that, foul beast!
He missed. Like me, Ken had an unusual class and great determination. But like me, he was still only level one. The slime landed between us, then hopped toward me. I jumped back, nearly slipping in a puddle of ooze. As it neared me, I had the presence of mind to speak. Blink! I appeared right behind it. The slime froze for a moment, presumably confused by the disappearance of its prey. I jammed my knife into it from behind. Ooze splattered on my hand, leaving mild burns. I yelped, hopping back and leaving the knife inside it. The slime hopped too, spinning around just in time for Ken's sword to tear it in half. It exploded, spraying us both with goop.
Your party has killed a slime. You have gained 3 experience points.
Ah, Ken stammered. His gaze gradually turned downward toward his once pristine robe. He stared for a time, as if frozen. It looked like something inside of him had fundamentally broken. It's okay, Ken. It's okay. I patted him. I'm pretty sure I only ended up smearing more slime on him in the process. Ken made a whimpering sound. Shh, it's okay. We're going home now. We won. He kept staring. I paused to retrieve my knife and pick up the tiny bag of coins the monster had left behind, then grabbed his arm and gently tugged him toward the entrance of the forest. For the first time in my life, I'd been involved in slaying a monster. Ken looked a little better when we were finally out of the woods.
Lesser heal, he said,
and a light washed over me. The mild burns on my hands healed immediately. Thanks. We split the coins and headed back to town. We rested after we returned. Fortunately, the town had a public bath area. Ken looked slightly less panicked after that. We slept in town for the night. The next day, we headed deeper into the forest. We'd only just gotten started. The next night, we returned to town covered in ooze once again. We split off to our respective bathing areas, washed, and met back up. We shared a room at the inn for the night. We'd made some coin from the slimes, but it still helped to be frugal. That night, I had a tough decision to make. Ken and I nodded to each other. Level up, I said. He echoed me. We'd each gained enough experience from hunting slimes to increase our level. And with that, we had new options.
I could see a list of all of the classes I was eligible for. Bag Mage was the first on the list, since I already was a level 1 Bag Mage. I had the option of using my level up to increase my Bag Mage level from 1 to 2, or I could choose to gain level 1 in another class I'd earned instead. That was called multi-classing, and it was relatively common for people who wanted to be flexible rather than specialized. Taking another level in Bag Mage would have helped me work on unlocking higher level bag magic, and, more important, dimensional magic. That was a tempting prospect. I also could have taken a level in another type of magic using class to increase my flexibility. I noted that I'd unlocked Black Mage and White Mage, which were two of the most common classes for magic use. Those were options to consider at some point. But if I wanted to use the Hero's Sword, I needed at least one level in something that would give me access to the sword proficiency skill. I had a number of class options available. Some were classic fighting classes like, well, fighter. Others were non-fighting classes that could still gain sword proficiency, like blacksmith, red mage, or bard. I looked through the list of everything available, smiled, and for the second time in my life, picked a class that virtually no one would ever choose. I selected the Slime Hunter class. The Ranger class was iconic for offering tracking skills, some alchemical skills, druidic magic, great weapon flexibility, and monster hunting abilities. The Monster Hunter class was a variant of Ranger, a more specialized version, losing the magic use and some other abilities in exchange for even bigger improvements to hunting specific monster types. It was also possible to get a class variant that was even more specialized by hunting a lot of monsters of a specific type. Some of these were relatively common, like Giant Hunter, Demon Hunter, or Undead Hunter, and generally considered very useful. Dragon Hunters were among the most prestigious, offering tremendous bonuses specifically against dragons. The Slime Hunter class was like that, but, without the prestige. They lost the monster hunting abilities against anything other than slimes, but they were really, really good at hunting slimes. In specific, slime hunters could intuitively sense the location and direction of slimes of various different types, making tracking them a breeze. And second, they gained tremendous bonuses when fighting against slimes. Things like extra damage and bypassing a portion of the slime's defenses. Of course, virtually no one wanted to bother being a slime hunter, because slimes were, for the most part, among the weakest and most common monsters available. Spending a valuable level on bonuses against slimes was, conventionally speaking, an absolutely terrible idea. There was, however, something most adventurers knew about, but didn't actually bother with. Silver slimes. Silver slimes were a type of rare slime that were notoriously difficult to kill. They were tremendously fast and tended to run away as soon as they saw someone. Beyond that, they were also extremely resilient to damage and virtually immune to most conventional forms of magic. When killed, silver slimes were known to provide hundreds of times more gold and experience than normal slimes, an amount similar to high-level monsters like trolls and lesser dragons. But finding a silver slime and actually killing one was about as likely as winning a jackpot in a casino. Hunting them deliberately was generally a fool's errand, since they were both rare to find and difficult to kill even when they were encountered. High-level adventurers could hunt silver slimes, but generally it wasn't worth their time. So, the end result was that silver slimes were generally seen as a rare reason to celebrate for anyone who got lucky enough to corner one, but not something anyone should actively hope to find and hunt down. But even with only one level in Slime Hunter, I had the ability to beat the odds. By taking the Slime Hunter class, I'd gained several new skills. The vast majority of them were weapon proficiencies, things like sword proficiency and bow proficiency. To make use of those, I went and bought a simple short sword and a short bow with the money I'd earned from slime hunting. They weren't much, but they were far superior to a kitchen knife. Sorry, kitchen knife. You served me well, and I appreciate you. I bought some cheap leather armor, too. It wouldn't do much for protection, but it was better than just my traveling clothes. My slime hunter class had given me the necessary proficiency to wear any light or medium armor, but I couldn't afford anything better just yet. Aside from that, I had two more interesting skills: slime tracking and slime slayer. As soon as we got back to the sludge forest, I tested them out. Slime tracking. Dozens of shimmering trails appeared, overlaying my vision. They were almost blinding at first. Most of them were blue in color, with the exception of one, which was green. This way, I said, waving in the direction of the green trail, and began to walk. Understood. Ken nodded and followed me. He couldn't see the trail himself. He'd leveled up too, but he'd taken a second level in Sword Saint, instead of an absurd secondary class like mine. It took us about a half hour to find what we were looking for, a green slime. It was largely unremarkable, save for being larger than a blue slime, poisonous, and considerably stronger. That poison part was the key. That made it dangerous, even to some newly second-level adventurers. Avoiding it would have been easy enough, but I had other ideas. I found a nearby tree to hide behind, trying to ignore the disgusting liquid trying to seep into my boots. And from there, I took aim with my bow. Slime Slayer, I whispered, activating my new skill. I fired my arrow. It hit the green slime dead on. The arrow pierced through the slime, leaving a splatter of goop. Then I saw a message.
Slime Hunter failed to activate. Melee attack required.
I cursed as the green slime spun around, then began rapidly hopping toward me. Bless! Ken stepped out in front of me, readying his sword. I fired another arrow, but missed. Ken took a swipe at the green slime, hitting it, but not hard enough to stop it. The slime crashed into him, and I heard him yelp in pain. I cursed, dropping my bow and drawing my short sword. Ken fell backward, trying to push the slime off of him, but it just ended up burning his hand in the effort. He couldn't maneuver well enough to hit it while it was on top of him. Slime Slayer, I pronounced again, then swung the short sword. When my sword hit the slime, the creature burst apart in an instant.
Your party has slain a green slime. You have earned 15 experience points.
Ken slumped to the ground, clutching his chest. I dropped down with him. You okay? He winced.
Lesser heal.
He shuddered.
Ow! That. Ow!
I nodded. Sorry. I didn't realize it, but apparently that skill only works on close-range attacks.
That's kind of awful, actually. But I'm glad it worked.
He pointed at the pile of treasure.
But at least we got something out of it.
We did. I smiled. And more than just the treasure. I pointed at the side of my head. We just got something important. We headed straight back to town. Even with the lesser heal spell, Ken was feeling sick. We suspected he'd been poisoned by contact with the slime, which wasn't something his healing spells could handle just yet. We bought an antidote, he drank it, and he slowly recovered over the course of the next few days. We hadn't earned enough experience to level up just from killing one green slime. We'd have to kill dozens for that. But with a better understanding of how my skills worked, we were ready for our next trip. We headed back to the forest. Slime tracking. I saw the same types of trails appear as before, blue and green. We followed one of the blue trails, discovered a blue slime, and quickly killed it. We repeated the process 5 more times. The blue slimes weren't worth much experience or gold, but they were very easy to find and defeat with my new abilities. And, now that I'd used slime tracking several times, I felt I had sufficient confirmation to have a good idea of how the skill was working. We headed deeper into the forest. Rather than heading toward the blue and green trails, we used them to avoid running into any monsters. More trails appeared and disappeared as I moved, giving me a better idea of the skill's maximum range. It took about 2 hours until I found what I was looking for. A new trail appearing in my vision. A silver one. Gotcha! We headed toward the silver line. The target was easy enough to find. The brilliant steel sheen of the creature's body was a stark contrast against the bright green ooze of the forest. I felt my heart beat faster. I'd actually found one. A silver slime! I pointed, then made a